Good morning. It's been a little while since I recorded. Thanksgiving has come and gone. It was enjoyable. I was sick during most of it. I'm still pretty congested from it, but very much able to cope with life and things. So we go far traveling Clayton today. I'm going to handle a router and access point install, no big deal, hopefully. Got pretty much the system worked out before I even went. And everything should hook up pretty nicely and hopefully make my client very happy. So things are going pretty good. I don't know what I'm going to do after that exactly. That probably won't even get me through till noon today. And might go from there up to Raton. And might decide this week to do a little sweep of the door. And I think this might be a good thing to do now that circumstances are changing. I just found out yesterday that I'm getting one of my philosophical wishes, and when it comes right down to it, it might not be it might be kind of interesting, you know. It lacks for flexibility, but it gets me home at night. They've decided that my job and my circumstance is an hourly job as opposed to a salaried one. And so I have to work a more regular schedule, and I can't play the games I can't put in 12-hour days when that's just more convenient than doing an 8-hour and then stopping. So I start behaving more like a jerky union worker. So we're going to become accustomed to that, which means that instead of me leaving home at 7 o'clock in the morning, which I used to do when I used to travel a long way to accomplish things, I don't start until 8. And I find myself a little bored by the whole circumstance. And although I'm still on salary at this particular moment, here in just a couple of days, starting December the 1st, I'm not going to be salaried anymore. And that actually opens up a few more possibilities. Number one, I'm supposed to be off work. That means either in some hotel room being put up, you know, doing an overnight or per diem from the university. Or, I'm supposed to be at home, you know, on my way home at 5. And so, and it also means that I kind of have to take a full lunch, whether it's convenient or not. So, that's really what it kind of comes down to. I seem to recall how difficult it was when Mexico State University got the union in a few years ago, and there was some nastiness, you know. A friend of mine who was a manager, you know, he said, I used to try to be really flexible and nice to my people, but now I can't be, because the union says I can't be. And that's kind of what that's kind of what's happening now. I don't think it'll affect me particularly, except for the fact that, you know, am I going to stay late? Am I going to stay through lunches and continue working? No. Because I'm hourly. I'm not a manager of anything. So, that's kind of what comes down. Anybody who says, well, you're the administrator of this thing and of this thing and of this thing, it's like, no, you're not. It says, you have a systems analyst in Las Cruces, and that's what he does. And you don't do anything else. My new title, I used to be a system analyst associate. Since they took a pretty active look at, I think it had a whole lot to do with the fact that a system analyst associate had to be associated with a system analyst, and none of us really were. We were somewhat autonomous. And therefore, instead of being a low-grade system, you know, kind of almost a system analyst trainee, not really a trainee, but, you know, a less responsible adjunct system analyst sort of person, they said no. They said what these guys do is they basically respond to tickets, and they go out and they take care of servicing those tickets, you know. And insofar as they manage or supervise, as a systems administrator, I think that's not, you know, that doesn't essentially become the job anymore. You know, the job becomes an experience. And an experienced technician. It's a technician job. So, you know, when people say, well, you need to keep control of your services, I said, no, because you give me specific instructions and I carry out those instructions, you know. And you can have a weird attitude about that and say, well, that doesn't sound very, you know, I'm not getting my ego stroking. And you go, well, I said, honestly, I said, I was kind of prepared not to have to do that kind of stuff. Anyway, so, you know, it doesn't bother me to a certain point. I'm a little concerned because this opens up the possibility that, they can choose to cut my hours. You know, when you're salaried, they own you, and as a result, if they want you to drop everything and go and do something and be somewhere, that's very much what has to happen. Besides that, that's kind of what's happening there. I'm not really sure what that boils down to ultimately. It's a little disconcerting. I try to be positive for Lisa that things aren't going to change. But you know what? By regulation, they may have to, you know. People who are accustomed to calling me directly to come and take care of their problems, they may have to just start calling the technology help desk, and that's all. You know. And I will be dispatched if the technology help desk wants me dispatched. you know, and that policy and stuff around that stuff will just kind of go away. You know, I won't have anything to do with that kind of stuff anymore. I think what it'll ultimately do is cause more problems actually, I think it becomes a bigger problem for me. I think the other people function more like tech, and I function more like a system analyst, and so it's going to really produce bigger problems for me. And that I'm going to have to, just tell people, hey, I said, you know what? I said, I've just been reduced down to just being a guy that gets called to come and take care of your problems. I said, with the supposition that sometime in the near future they may choose to outsource this function to independent contractor. I said, that independent contractor may be me, but you can't call me directly. You know, you have to call the technology help desk, and they will do what they can at their level, and then I will be dispatched if need be. They've been slowly kind of, I think they've taken some faulty steps in the past and then let it kind of go, and it didn't seem like it was that big of a thing. It may now get to the point to where it's that kind of a thing, and that it will be an issue of, well, it's manpower things, and how many hours are you spending doing this and doing this? You're going to have to report your time a whole lot more, and we may choose to cut your hours if you're simply not working enough, you know, if you're simply not taking care of enough issues. And it's going to get a little colder, a little clammier, and, I had my foot kind of out the door anyway, and, this may very well put me in a mind to continue getting out there further. I remember when I was applying for the job in at Sitka. I was really hoping to get the job at Sitka. I thought that would really probably be excellent for me, for the kind of person that I am. And, it had a certain excellent technology, backdrop to it. But, it was getting out of just simply being IT. And, I find now as time goes on that I am, I don't know if it's educationally or if it's where I am or stuff like that, that I'm getting, this is an indication of the marginalization of my duties, and that's, and I understand that, but it also means that it's not really fitting with what I want to do in life, And so, I think this may be a little bit of writing on the wall that, that where in the past they were trying to be as flexible as they could and take into account abilities and stuff like that. We're now getting to the point to where, no, because this is the job, and if you want your job to be different, you have to get a different job. And I guess I'm more of a system admin type, at least in my skill level with computers, which is a little higher than where I am now. And I need to make an active choice, you know. Instead, I don't think the choice can be just stay where you are. I don't think that is, that answers the potential, you know. I'm working below my potential. This has been, you know, this has been an okay job. Actually, it's been a great job. I've got a wonderful boss. And the fact that it's getting worse does not reflect on my boss at all. You know, it's simply circumstantial. And what can you do about that? You know, he can't do anything about it. And I really can't do anything about it, you know, since we're part of much larger things. I've got a circumstance that is different than this, and I need to I need to be looking at that as well, for saying, you know, is this what you want to do with the rest of your life? And really, I guess, you know, I've been talking about forks in the road for a long time now, many months, maybe even a year or so, maybe even a year or two, about forks in the road when you have to make a decision, and what those decisions need to be. I just recently listened again, and had Lisa listen to Gary North, who's a man that I have great respect for. Smart, smart fella. And Gary, I forget what his degrees and stuff like that are in. I think his degree is basically history. I think he has a PhD in history. And anyway, he was talking about the difference between your occupation, which is how you make money, and your calling, which is what you're supposed to do, and that they aren't necessarily the same thing. And he was explaining what his calling was, which was this biblical answer to, well, he eventually decided that he needed to do a commentary, an economics commentary on the Bible, you know, Bible as it as it relates to economics, verse by verse. So he finally completed it, and 25, 26 volume thing, huge thing, 11,000 pages, and that's basically what he's done. That was his calling. I think he's scratching 70. So, not a bad time to finally have accomplished your life's work. And I know during all the Shetland process, the only real clear inspiration that I ever got concerning the whole matter was patience. And I don't know, you know, and that's vague. You know, it doesn't tell you what you should be patient about. You know, is it patience in wanting to get to Shetland? Is it patience in knowing what to do next? There may be something else entirely different that's coming up. It's just patience, so I'm just kind of hanging out, and I have not, I was just looking at some Shetland materials this weekend, and I'm sorry, I still want to go. I still want to go. If circumstances allow for the thing, I still want to go. And, you know, there are still a few, there are still a few visa possibilities. I'm pretty sure work is just closed to me, you know, unless I become this really amazingly specialized and impossible to fill circumstance, which isn't going to happen in Shetland anyway. Work is out. Getting a work visa. In this year-long process, it was basically a process to see if this could be done as a student visa. And the basic answer is no. And, you know, it's just that Shetland doesn't have educational possibilities to that level. May at some point in the future, but I can't see that as being true because of just circumstances, you know. Is it going to grow? Is it going to get larger? Probably not. It's probably going to be approximately the same size it is now. You know, if things go well, it'll simply be what it is. You know, and that's fine. I find myself looking at the outskirts of Shetland again for possibilities. And, tempting. So the only two left, basically, that would basically do the job are, number one, investor, which means that you throw a few million pounds, you know, you put it into a British bank account, and they will give you the ability to live there, kind of buying your way in. Or the next one is entrepreneurial. Bring a business there. Now, you know, I am not an employer type of a person particularly at all. But I do know, you know, so I think they've really been kind of excited about getting internet business in. They're always trying to upgrade their internet so they can attract people with money. That's really the big thing. People with the resources, people with money, to make stuff happen. You know? So that it really doesn't matter where you are, you know, you can do that. And I certainly have the technical expertise sufficient to run a web server. You know, to do something along those lines. and to make something like that work. So that may be the next opportunity. The great part is I can pretty much start the business here and get it running and then transfer it over there. So the question becomes, what on earth do you do with this? How do you get it done? Businesses are all about niches. Find something that isn't being taken care of that you can take care of. And you know what? The universe is just full of such things and such opportunities. And so, so that's kind of what the circumstance is all about. That's what kind of the business plan is all about. And so when it comes to things like Shetland, I'm starting to think along the lines of, yeah, I'm going to have to do something. You know, we're going to have to start making money in other realms. You know, and that constitutes kind of the fork. The fork really was, are you going to just do a technology-ish job, try to get more into computers, working for the people doing computers or something like that, and trying to get into system administration, network administration, stuff like that. Or are you going to go in a whole other direction? And like I said, that job at Cisco, which was actually to kind of run a tutoring center at a college, was probably my one hope. I think I tried a couple of others. One hope into is saying, you know what, I really don't want to fix computers for that. And I find myself saying that all the time. You know, I don't really want to do this for the rest of my life. And it doesn't really seem to fit with the whole concept of life's work. It's always been kind of an adjunct off the side. It's made better money than like WIC, for instance, or doing professional do-gooding or doing social work, which I really have a sincere problem with those things. It wouldn't even be interesting to me except on a policy level, you know, and I don't think I'm really I don't think I'm really willing to go that far and to take those, you know, I'm not really a terribly good governmental source. I've done it before, you know, grant writing, things like that. But, I found it to be, unpleasant work. And just risky, you know. And I didn't even find it to be a skill set that I could really go back and say, boy, you know, I'm really grateful for this skill. I'm really grateful for this talent. So as I remain here at my job, even though I am reasonably sure the job is going to become less and less satisfying and fulfilling, and I'll be honest, that's fine. You know? It's not a horrible thing. If nothing, this is just giving me a little push, which I probably need. The fact that this job is going to change. And this is a really a job for somebody who's just starting out. It's no job for somebody in their 40s. You know. This should never be a settle for job. This should be more of a, yeah, it kind of happened, and what are you going to do, and is it a wonderful job? You know, well, it's better than many jobs, but I think I'm coming to another fork in the road, and this one is much more decisive. I said, is it, has the time come to de-emphasize the technical aspects and start moving forward with something else, you know? Let me tell you what everything ends up being. It ends up being that I go to work, I fix up computers, blah, 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 do this, do that, and and I don't know what to do with them. You know, I'm not finding the joy in it. You know, it's just like, well, okay, well, now what am I going to do? And I just end up redoing computers. I've reworked 5 computers in the last 2 or 3 years. And basically just didn't do much else. That was basically all. And I find myself being drawn time and time again toward content and toward more of the philosophical thing. Even my quote fiction writing, and I'll be really honest that my that my fiction writing has of late gotten quite philosophical and quite non-fictiony. And it's something that kind of disturbs my wife, who likes fiction and likes some of the fiction that I've done in the past, but frankly that I feel like, I don't know if I've outgrown it, But it just didn't, you know. It was, here is an example. The Miracle of a Quilt, probably my most known story. I guess at some point, I don't remember what I did. I sent off to Barber Publishing, and I got a nice thing back that they wanted more stories like this. And I think I found out, or at least I've come to the realization later, that we were confused about what this was supposed to accomplish. The editor I was working with at Barber, and I didn't work with her much, because she basically said, I need some more stories, can you give me some more stories? And it's like, yeah, it's going to take me some time. It's like, okay, fine. Send it to me when you're ready. And she liked the fact that it was, what would Jesus do? And you know what? In reading The Miracle of the Quilt, I don't even look at the story that way. It was not a question of what would Jesus do. And following that example, because that's really quite simplistic. You know, fine. It's a good philosophy. It's a simple one. The Miracle of the Quilt, I had always thought, and when I went back and thought about it again, I said, you know what? I said, it has nothing to do with that. It was actually a critique of professional do-gooders. The main character who has no name. She was living off of the prestige of these quilts. She never understood why. She had become quite a up-and-coming kind of, you know, to be a really successful do-gooder, you really end up not doing very much good at all. You know, you end up going to parties, you end up going to fundraisers, you end up wearing nice clothes and driving a nice car, and being kind of the face for an organization. But you really don't do any of that work. That really stops being your, you know, doing good ceases to be your work way back when. You end up being an organizational leader and you start hiring people and, you know, you get so much more into human resources, things like that, you know, and it really ends up not being that at all. Even what do-gooders would like to be doing. Totally putting aside the whole concept of, on some level, you probably don't even want to be a do-gooder. You know? You don't want to? Well, no. It's not that you don't want to be a do-gooder. You find, or at least I did, I found that the work I ended up doing wasn't really that helpful. In fact, to many degrees, it threw you into weird tangents, you know. To answer program goals and guidelines, you ended up administering a program not really helping people particularly. And people would have to do this little dance in front of you to get the peanuts that you were throwing at them. You know, and that's what it ended up being. It ended up being a weird kind of form of strange work. You know, people would have to do this to be able to get this done. And I guess that was what was disheartening with me, because I didn't feel like I was really helping anybody. You know, I think I was trying to get to the point where I was trying to find a way to help people. I got into the MCH Council, hoping that would do that, but that was even more of, systemic, doing some kind of weird government dance in order to get some money to do some interesting things. And really when it came down to it, I really didn't find that it was fulfilling either. You know, and that doesn't say anything bad about the people associated with it. Some really wonderful people were associated with the MCA Council and with Rick, the job I was doing. There were some really wonderful people in there. But I always question, what exactly are we doing? And why are we doing this? And do I really want, as just a person, a citizen, we'll get into that term, as a person, do I really want my government doing this stuff? I would much rather have a non-profit, you know, non-government organization, you know, taking care of the nutritional needs of babies and their mothers. I would rather have an NGO come in and talk about breastfeeding and how much better it is and try to help them and encourage them to do so. Much more along the lines of those kinds of things. And you can keep it at a level where it doesn't end up being subject to silliness, you know. Well, you know, we don't have funding for that this year. We're cutting funding, so you're going to stop doing this. We're going to concentrate on this. And you go with this, that now that you're getting was actually what was the good parts of the program. The parts of the program that I thought were the most effective. You know, whether it was breastfeeding promotion or any of these other things. And you know, it was an interesting circumstance. And you know, I found very quickly that you know, I just didn't want to continue on, because even continuing on, it wasn't really going to be helping, you know. Well, I'm going to become a government administrator, and you go, I'm not really interested in being a government administrator. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to do that, because you end up making, you know, I'll tell you what was really telling. When I went to work for Roundtree, my first administrator job, where I was boss, you know, and I hired, fired, and I did stuff like that. I didn't stay there for maybe 5 weeks total. I found myself longing to be the people that were working for me. I wanted to be an early childhood interventionist. I wanted to spend time with those kids and actually feel like I made a difference, that I helped families and stuff like that. I wanted to do that much more than I wanted to be the boss that went to Swine. I remember I went to one, it is a very hazy thing, but it was a dark room. It was a United Way fundraiser. And I was there in this shirt. I forget which letter I was. I think I think it was like an E or something in United Way. And, you know, doing a song and dance, trying to get that thing done. Now, I'm not saying that those people are bad people. I just knew that I couldn't do that. That wasn't my role at all, ever, was to be that kind of a person. Another thing I need to do, I need to be much more cognizant of keeping the rules. and I don't know why being an hourly worker should make that much difference, but it does to me. To say, you know what? You're getting paid by the hour now. You're not getting paid by the job. Not that I'm getting paid by the job now, but yeah, now it's hourly. So it's like, make sure that you're doing, you know, you're filling that time. Because if that means that you spend the bulk of your time on the road, running here and running there, taking care of things, that is exactly what you should be doing. So yeah, I think beyond anything else, you know, I said, I've still got to keep telling Lisa, I said, Lisa, our time here is still, anyway, so, you know, I was talking about do-gooder management. I'm not saying that it's a horrible job, I'm just saying I can't do it. I'm glad for people who can do that. I'm glad for people who have skills that way. Because they do. A lot of these services wouldn't exist without people like that. I just know that I'm not that person. I've got to be more of the trenches warrior. I am a trench warrior. And in doing that, you know, in being that church warrior, you know, you have to, you have to be prepared to do that kind of stuff, you know? You have to be prepared to to just be in the trenches, you know? This is what I do. I just ride around, I do this, I do this, I do this. I don't take care of that stuff. I'm not in charge of larger things. Heck, I'm an employee of somebody else, so I don't even take care of managing myself. You know? I'm on the road, and I do this, and I do that. And I think when it comes down to December, it really ends up being a whole aspect of, you know, what is my job now? Because it was somewhat fluid in the past, but I think it's becoming less so now. It's becoming more strident. I think now we almost need to have people call in to the help desk, and the help desk needs to assign things out. Needs to assign things out. You know, because I'm not a one-man shop here anymore. I can't be. Because the next person that you're going to hire for this job is not going to do the job the way I did it. And shouldn't do the job the way I did it. You know? Shouldn't feel so independent. Absolutely shouldn't. An hourly worker should not have those kinds of things. Because frankly, that means this job is becoming unpalatable to me. This is the best life, you know. That's just the way it goes. It was an interesting job before. So yeah, over time it's gotten less and less. You know. And because I don't have enough control over it, I can't make adjustments to that in employment. So this gives me a wonderful opportunity. If I start a sideline business, if I'm if I use my off time to do something else, the New Mexico State University has absolutely no reason, you know, has absolutely no call to say, oh, wait, no, you can't be doing that. And he goes, oh, I'm hourly. This is when 5 o'clock rolls around, I can do anything else I want to do, including not, you know, including things that the university may not even like. He says, how about that? Because I'm not on this hourly. I am not owned by you. So, this situation not only is kind of squeezing me out of the employment I'm in now, but it's also kind of opening up an opportunity for me to do something else. I need to figure out what I want to do about that. And I want it to be an expansion of kind of the direction I've been going. There's no point, you know, it's time to try to monetize, and I'm really kind of concerned about that whole concept. It's time to start looking in that other direction, you know. Since I'm saying, you know what, I'm not going to go any further into technical work. It's just not, I don't want to rise in the ranks particularly. I talk that way to people that I interview with, that I kind of know. That I think they can see through me, honestly. I suck at trying to, I am not a good salesman. I can't sell something that I don't believe in. And I think all salesmen at their heart have to kind of do that, you know. Have to be a real relationship type, and I'm not. I'm not a relationship type. I am more of a philosophical war, you know. I'm a guy that has principles and stands behind them. And about what you're supposed to care about and how you're supposed to feel. And that's pretty much what it is. Am I going to end up being kind of an independent contractor? Yeah. With the outsourcing of stuff, I don't want to mess with. You know? Other people, I don't want to mess with other people. You know? That's just not interesting to me. Except as something of an instruction. And I know that sounds weird given what I get into, but that's kind of what happens. And well, we're just going to have to see where this all goes. I keep trying to stay away from family sovereignty, and I find that I can't. I was working on it this morning, which is good, you know. I found that I haven't walked here for this week because I've been sick, and I'm still kind of wrestling, and here pretty soon I'm going to start walking. I'm going to keep working on it. See where it goes. Am I going to bring up Shetland? Heck yeah, I'm going to bring up Shetland because it was part of the process of getting there, about saying, you know what, this is something that Shetland could do. You know, and I know it seems off the beaten path. Well, how is that going to bring more jobs to Shetland? How is that going to improve our economy? And you go, you know what? I said, I think if you get things like an improvement of your economy from this, it will be a byproduct. You know? I think it will be people want to go there because family, because they feel intrinsically, whether they really think that way or not, whether it's really a thought process to go through, it's a place that honors the family. And that becomes the most important thing. Does it, I don't know what the word is. Can you see it in your legislation? Is it a topic that comes up regularly, you know, in council meetings? You know, how is this going to affect families? Is this going to affect families positively or negatively? Is it going to help or is this going to hinder? And when those guys say, well, it's going to hinder, and you go, oh, we don't do that, period. I said, that's a definite no-no. This is, if it starts trying to break families apart, or trying to say that a family broken apart will be rewarded for falling apart, you know, don't go there. Things like that, you know, and so I'm not sure exactly where this is going to go, where this whole concept is going to move forward. And it isn't so much family sovereignty as family taking power and stomping on everybody else, you know. I think that's always what bothers Lisa about that thing, is family power isn't a whole lot better. You know, and I don't know if it's really an action so much as it is an attitude, you know, the family center perhaps. Because when you treat people as individual people can't take care of themselves. You know, and that's not to be rude. That's not to be rude. But individual people need larger support structure. Independent people need government programs and stuff like that so much more than families. Because families, you know, the one thing that society depends on families more for, and it's starting to slip away, it's really the last thing families have, is that they are responsible for taking care of young children, and it's getting shorter and shorter and smaller, in that now it's typically, you know, government starts stepping in at 3 and 4, definitely 5-year-olds. If you're 5 years old, your kid is to be in school. And government begins its massive responsibility to your children, where your children are expected to do their will. And if your parent isn't signed on, hook, line, sinker, going to the PTA meetings, participating, your school can have a problem with that and can use that as fodder to, you know, have social services come and get your kid. Now, we haven't gotten there, but we see it occasionally, and it's slowly coming, where government just says, you know what, and that parents so often can't provide 3 government-approved meals a day, not as well as a large corporate entity does, although quite the contract is going to have progression. And I'm sorry, the food service schools will starve all children to death. But, you know, that we see these experiments here and there about people saying, you know, better, you know, to focus people more on loyalty to country or loyalty to culture or loyalty to state, you know, we need to get them away from family, which is absolutely evil and wrong. You know, your first and highest responsibility should be to your family. You know, it shouldn't just be that the raising of children is responsibility of families. The care for older members of the family is also a family matter. And not to be so easily and quickly thrown over to quasi-governmental / institutional, you know, circumstance. I understand when that needs to be done, but it's done far too much. And that, you say, oh, well, you got like Walton syndrome. The world's never been like that. You go, you know what? It said, actually, it was like, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't marvelous. You know, it wasn't a beautiful, blissful world. These things are difficult. Dealing with your family is difficult. But necessary. Necessary. In order to make things work. You know, and that includes older population, you know? We're living to be far older. This is our elder parents can contribute for so much of a longer time. You know, it used to be if somebody reached the age of 60, they were crippled and could hardly move. And so you were taking care of somebody who was basically bedridden. For a majority of your life. You know, when you got to your 40s, by and large, your kids were gone. That's not true in my case. I've still got plenty of kids around. Anyway, then we see the government policies, and this is probably where it strikes first. Strangely, it's been governmental policy in trying to set up a pension for older people and trying to service older people. We end up tearing them out of home. We end up putting them in places where government can more inexpensively care for them. You know? Senior centers. We need to get all the little old people together at senior centers because it's so much easier to feed them there. Oop. There. Where's my phone? There it is. Oh. Okay. I am doing just fine. What's going on? Yeah. The other computer now. Yeah. Have you recently changed passwords? Oh. So when you say in here and in there, where are you sitting? Okay. Right. Right. I thought we did. I thought we had just done that. Well, no, there's nothing I can do. If the password you have isn't working, it's not working. I can't flip a magic switch from where I am and make change. Okay, first thing first, it absolutely has to be plugged into the network, which sometimes it is not, because if you guys have been using the Polycom, the network will be hooked up to Polycom instead. So yeah, you might need to do that. Make sure it's plugged into the network, and then give it a restart and then try that password again. See if that helps. Try that. Okay. Okay, I'm sorry. Can I take that thing? This is the kind of stuff that I really want to get past. $100,000. I'm doing the same gosh dang thing all the time. Well, I need to stop this because work is intervening, which is fine. It's work time, so that's the way it goes. All right.